Well, welcome to the Repos non-league show, and we're here for the next hour or so. And of course, later on in the show, we'll be going back down the mouse hole, and when we will have Andrew Large from Mousel, he'll come and join us a bit later on in the show, tell us all about how things have been going. Of course, unfortunately, they suffered their first defeat of the season this weekend against Salisbury in the FA Cup, and so he'll talk to us about their trip to that, and who they might have got in the FA Cup as well. But of course, joining us tonight, well, top left-hand corner, a man that probably people might not recognise the face, but might recognise the voice, because of course, he is the voice of Bognor Regis Radio, which of course is Peter Hood. So welcome, Peter.
Thanks, David. Good to be here.
And, well, the next gentleman that's about is joining us as well. It's an absolute privilege and an honour to have him with us tonight, because it's been a long time since we've had a chat. So it's fantastic to see and great to see him back in work. And of course, Ipswich Wanderers new manager, Glenn Driver. So welcome back, Glenn.
Thank you. Thanks for having us, mate.
No problem whatsoever. So guys, I mean, we've seen the FA Cup draw today. Before we go into our individual sort of clubs and stuff, we've seen the draw today. Any sort of draws there, if you have seen it, that sort of, you know, if you was an individual, you were sort of associated to a club you'd like to go and see?
Well, I haven't seen the draw, I have to own up, David, today, because Bognor Regis Town departed at Burgess Hill, who have also departed to Sheppey United. So I'd like to know who they've got.
Well, I'll have a look. I'll get it up in a second. But Glenn, I mean yourself, have you seen?
I mean, I've seen Needham Mark have got through, which is a great achievement for a Suffolk side. Likewise with Peter. I haven't really looked at the draw, mate. I've been so busy doing other things with Ipswich Wanderers today, I didn't really take time to have a look, but I believe they've been drawn away, I believe. I think I see.
I'll have a quick look, you know. I'll try and get it up, because the best place to always find it, of course, is Ollie, and he's the man that you can always rely on to go in and find it. So let me just go in there and I'll read it out to you. I know one tie that I have seen, because of course it interests me, and who he's got was, of course, Enfield Town. They travel to Hal Zoen in the Southern League. So let's get it up now. So we'll start with the top one. So it's Blythe Spartans versus Worksop Town. So Blythe Spartans or Bradford Park Avenue versus Worksop Town. Whitby Town versus Mulpeth Town. Darlington versus Farlsley Celtic or Scarborough. Leek versus South Shields. Lancaster versus Ashton United or Atherton Collieries. Hightown versus Spennymoor Town or Marine, Chester versus Nantwich, Curzon Athletic versus Runcorn, Linnets or Chorley, Macclesfield versus Warrington Rylands. I thought that was quite a good tie, because because Warrington just being, you know, a few seasons ago were of course in the FA Vars final. Hereford against Cambridge City, Stourbridge versus a team that's been going great guns in the Southern League this year in Mickleova, Hitchin against Kettering Town. Kings Lynn or Averley versus Hornchurch. That could be sort of like a rerun of last year's Premier League playoff final. Galston versus Hemel Hempstead. Hal Zoen versus Enfield Town. Bishop Stortford or Biggleswade Town versus Barton Rovers, or one of my favourite sides in Wroxham. Colville versus Tamworth. Another interesting one, I think, because I think it was only goal difference that separated the two teams in the Southern League last year. Bromsgrove Sporting versus a game that we'll keep an eye on tonight when it starts, Ware or Chelmsford City, Rush or Olympic versus Boston, Peterborough Sports or Redditch United versus Needham Market, Canvey Island or Braintree versus Scunthorpe or Brackley, Billericay versus St Albans, AFC Totten versus Berkhamsted, Wingate and Finchley or Farnborough versus Western Supermare, Dover Athletic versus Haringey Borough. This is the one that Pete was looking for. This could be a good game, actually. Merthyr Town. I always want to keep calling them Merthyr Tydfil, but it's not. It's Merthyr.
Yeah.
Merthyr Town or Taunton Town versus Sheppey United. Yeovil Town versus Didcot. Salisbury versus Slough. Gosport versus Welling. Torquay versus Hungerford. Reading City or Winchester City versus Maidstone United. Carshalton Athletic versus Norfolk or Cray Valley. Horsham or Marlow versus Hamworth Villa, Lewis versus Hampton and Richmond Borough, Chesham versus Margate or Folkestone, Cray Wanderers or Ramsgate versus Plymouth Parkway or Frome Town, And I bet you that if Craig Wanderers win that, they're quite happy to be at home and not have to travel down there. That would be a bit of a travel for them. Worthing versus Whitehawk and Weymouth versus Bath. The Weymouth versus Bath one, I think Bobby Wilkinson in charge at Weymouth, that'll be a good time.
Yeah, certainly will be.
Yeah, definitely so.
I mean, with the FA Cup and Bognor, was you disappointed, Peter, to see him go out at an early stage?
Very disappointed indeed, David. It was a poor performance against Burgess Hill, who were up for it. And in the hot sunshine in Sussex, we weren't, as a team, I have to say, up for it at all. I think there was a mentality there that was wrong on the day. And even though the keeper, Taylor Seymour, who didn't get a contract at Bognor, had a blinder, the Premier League side should have beaten the step below side, even at their place. It's been a fixture that Bognor have usually won over the years just lately. I've been to many of the games and I haven't seen Bognor lose at Burgess Hill until that game. And of course, they got sorted out by Sheffield United as well on the weekend. So probably if Bognor had got through, we would have struggled, I would have thought, again, because against the lower league sides, David, they tend to find problems, Bognor do, unfortunately. Against any other side, they go to, after the Burgess Hill defeat, they go to Enfield, unbeaten, won every virtually game bar one, and give a good performance, very unlucky not to take the 3 points. But a bit of a Jekyll and Hyde side at the moment, I have to say, David, the Rocks.
I was listening to your commentary. I was on the way to my nephew's first birthday party. So I'll sit there normally doing the radio commentary for them. And I thought to myself, oh, great, I know this. I sort of sent you a link to everybody that normally listens to me. So I thought to myself, I'm listening. So I'm sitting at the birthday party and I had you talking in one ear and I'm trying to listen to see what was going on at the party at the same time. But it did sound, I mean, people said it was a great game. And, you know, with the heat, they said it was absolutely unbelievable.
It was, David. It was 33 degrees on the pitch. So credit to the players. They kept going. They played at a good pace throughout. And that did show the fitness levels of both Enfield and Bognor. One of the I like one of the FA Cup ties, Horsham, who are close to our hearts here. They didn't get through on Saturday. I expected them to go through, but they've got a pathway there once again, I think, to the first round proper, you know, if they can get past. They've got to win their replay. They should have won on Saturday by all accounts, but they didn't. But that's one that looks quite good for me.
I don't know if Glenn sort of agrees or and yourself agree. I mean, one of the results that sort of took my eye over the weekend was Ware's 3-3 draw with Chelmsford City. I thought that was a great result for them. And I mean, I've seen the third goal numerous times. It keeps popping up on my Twitter feed all the time. And spoke to Paul Housie last night, and lucky to actually get an interview with him these days. Now he's going through Sky Sports and all the rest of it that he's on. And Ollie Burgess is talking. But I mean, it was a great result for them because the replay tonight, I know he said last night when I spoke to him that, you know, they've got a few missing tonight with a quick turnaround and, you know what it's like trying to get players off work on a quick turnaround on a Monday night. So we'll keep fingers crossed for him. But Glenn, I mean, yourself, I mean, what's the furthest you've ever done in the FA Cup?
We were pretty much the same. When I was at Leicester, we got to the fourth qualifying round and we drew Westfields away. And they were lowest ranked side in the division. And we were going great guns. We were in the playoff positions in our league. Went there, they had some good results, and we got turned over 2-1. And to get to the first round proper, we most probably as a football club felt we'd never get a better chance, you know. But I'm with Peter. I think sometimes when you play a lower level, I know it comes down to mentality and professionalism, but we set our guys up really well, and a couple of mistakes cost us and we ended up going out. And even to today, you think, will you ever get that opportunity to get the first round proper again? That's one of the results I always look back over my managerial career and think that's the one that got away.
I mean, is it one of those seasons where when you do get knocked out, you know, in that sort of round, do you then as a manager and as a supporter as well, do you actually get to that stage where you look at that sort of first round draw and then sort of, you know, want to try and find the closest big building and jump off it, you know, because you find out it's an absolute humdinger. I mean, I know, you know, when I was with Harlow a few years back, you know, they played Braintree in the fourth qualifying round. We lost to, you know, really unfortunate again on the day, lost. And I think the next round was a home tie, would have been against Oxford United. And you sit there and you think, you know, real sort of kick in the teeth type.
I think I was watching on Twitter. I don't know if you watch him, but I watch Mark White quite a bit. I think he's a great character for football. And I don't think he's ever got to the first round proper with Dorking. And he said he's something I've always wanted to achieve. And you look how big a club Dorking are. So it just goes to show how hard it is to get to the first round. But like I say, going back to that Leicester game against Westfields away, you don't get that greater opportunity. We pulled the lowest ranked side in the competition at the time. And fair play, they beat us over, and the FA Cup was there, so you walk past it and everything else. And yeah, it takes a little while to get over, really. But there's been bigger clubs than what Leicester are who haven't made the first round proper. So, you know, hopefully, you know, it'd be good to see Leicester at some time make the first round proper, as lead and market as well.
With Leicester, I mean, are you quite pleased, though, that in a way, I suppose, that you're no longer the manager there because they're now in that Southern League? I mean, or is it one of those?
I've done it, Dave, for the first season, then obviously left, went to Braintree, and then ended up back to Leicester. And yeah, Old Church away on a Tuesday night from Ipswich, mate, is one of the highlights. And I feel for Leicester, I feel for Needham, I feel for Sudbury, because the A12 is a better road for us to go straight down. You know, you've got all this sort of like step through sides at that area. But the unfortunate thing is with Lowestoft and Leicester, they're out the middle of nowhere, you know, trying to get players there at times can be difficult. But fair play to sort of like Leicester as a football club. They've gone from strength to strength. You know, they've got Dan Eden and Chris Wigger in charge. And their youth development has got better and better as the season's gone over. That's something that myself and Tony oversee when we were there. And it's gone on from strength to strength. And they lost out on the playoffs last year. Had a good trophy run, I believe. And, you know, just wish them all the best this time around.
I suppose it could be a little bit worse. I mean, I know, because I know the gentleman that will come on in a minute, the secretary of Mousel, he'll be on later on. And, you know, theirs is, you know, I think they drew sort of Malvern in the FA Trophy, and they've got this one in the, and all the teams that are the furthest away from them, they've drawn in both cup competitions this year. But, you know, their journeys this year is over 5,000 miles this year, because they're the furthest southerly club in the country, like, you know, at step four. And literally their journeys are absolutely horrific. I think the other night, 3 o'clock kickoff, and they got back from Malvern the following day.
It's the same though. I mean, I've been out of the loop for a little while. So obviously when I look at league tables now, I'm like, why are you doing in that league? How come you're over there? Why they shifted you into that league? So I don't really get it. I really don't, especially for clubs in our area, because it really does put a strain on the football club to, like I say, Tamworth, Halesowen, the list is just endless to travel all that way. And if you're away at Halesowen on a Tuesday and, I don't know, away at Old Church on a Saturday, it's crippling for the football club, because every journey is a coach journey. Mm. Every away game, apart from your Needham Market, your Sudbury, most clubs in that division now become a coach journey, and it puts a big strain on the football clubs here to travel to up north rather than go down south. So it's I've never really got the divide and the split. I really haven't. I mean, I remember going to Bognor Regis on a Tuesday night. I said to the chairman, "You're having a giggle. They've rearranged our Saturday fixture. Bognor's pitch was waterlogged." I think I got home about 4:30 the next morning, which is absolutely ridiculous.
I must have been.
I know that Leicester trip, Glenn, as well.
Oh,
you know,
mate, it's horrible, isn't it?
I feel very sorry for your local derby. I think being 60, 70 miles away is ridiculous. I know.
Yeah,
I have to endorse what you said.
We travelled all the way to you on a Tuesday night, mate. I think it's the nightmares from it.
That was always the one that I looked at, I'll be honest. When we, you know, when it was sort of like when he was with Harlow and they were sort of in Bogner's League, and even now with Enfield, you look for that and you think, oh, it's true. And whenever they do those long journeys, and I don't know if you guys agree, whenever they do the long journeys as a league, I don't know whether or not it's a case of how, you know, realistically, unless you get somebody like Kelly on the show, you know, Kelly Discipline on the show or somebody, but it always baffles me when you look at it and think, right, okay, so we've got a 3G or a 4G surface, for instance, you know, and we're playing Bognor. That's, you know, miles and miles and miles away, our furthest journey. Right, okay, so during the summer months, oh, guess what? We're playing Bognor at home on the 3G. But when it's absolutely tipping down, freezing cold, snow, rain, driving wind, you know, on a Sunday, you're going down the Bognor.
Yeah. You know, I think it snowed when we went up there, Dave.
It's crazy, yeah. But it's, but it's just really, really weird. I mean, you know, even back to Mousel, you know, I think, you know, you were saying about local derbies and that. Their local derby's Tavistock. And he says it's an hour and a half journey, and that is their local derby. And they've just been drawn against them in the FA Cup as well. But it's you know, sorry, in the trophy. But it's literally that sort of thing. You look at it and you think, wow. Do you know what I mean? That is a fair old journey for your local derby, an hour and a half journey to get to your local derby. But just crazy, crazy stuff to you know, some of the journeys you see on there. I mean, I know Truro used to be the Summer League was the one that everybody hated. It's Truro. And we had a good laugh with Andrew Large, the secretary at Mousel, and said, you do realise now that you're going to be the most hated club in the Summer League because of how far it was. And I think they were quite happy to see, in a way, Met Police, you know, relegate themselves, because there was a likelihood that Harrow Borough were going to be in that Summer League South Division. And he said, look at the distance between Harrow Borough and like deepest, darkest Cornwall. It was just ridiculous.
It's like when we were at Braintree. When I was at Braintree, I think four away games on the bounce. I mean, don't forget, I live in Ipswich. I went to Bath, I went to Havant and Waterlooville, I went to Weymouth, and then we went, when did we go away? Another long old trip. And that was all in the first month of the season. You're just like, the distances are just crazy.
Yeah.
And it's like Leicester, you know, you could be unlucky and get three away games, and you just feel like you spent a week on a coach, you know. So yeah, it's like the league just get all the teams, put them in a hat, and just draw them out after the time.
David, if I can just say, yeah, we at Bognor are on the cusp of Southern and Isthmian. Now, many thought we would go into the Southern Premier this year. If we'd gone into the Southern Premier, we would have done less miles travelling than we are this season. We seem to be permanently, you know, going through the Dartford Tunnel, getting held up there on every away game for. And we did favour, actually, most supporters would have favoured the new grounds that we haven't been to in the Southern, rather than the tough trips to Leiston, which we've done before as well, Glenn. And, of course, Needham Market we played as well. We went up there in the Isthmian Premier.
Someone always says to me that the reason Bognor don't get put in the Summer League is because of your old manager, shall we say. That he's got something to do with it.
We think that as well, David. Jack Pearce, you know, vice chairman of the FA, yeah. But, you know, I don't think so, geographically. Jack, he's a legend at Bognor. We all love him. You know, and he's still involved, of course. This is the job he still wants. He's given it to Robbie Blake now to manage the team, though. He still directs things, Jack does. He's a legend in his own right.
We were just talking about away games. I remember seeing a team, and I couldn't remember who it was, and I've just realised it was their last two away games in the Conference South this season, which is Averley. The last two games, April the 6th away to Truro, and April the 13th away to Western Supermare.
Oh, wow. Blimey.
That's literally their last two away games. You just think, what did you do to deserve that? Do you know what I mean?
But you can't call it regional these days, David, because of the pyramid system, can you? Let's be honest.
And I'll be honest with you, you know, we had Lawrence Jones on the show, you know, end of last year. And he said, David, it's the most impossible job ever.
Yeah,
whatever you do, he said, someone's not going to be happy. He said, but, you know, it's just the way things are. It's because of where the lines are and all the rest of it. He said it's very, very difficult, you know, to actually get it. I mean, I say, when we was with Harlow in the Isthmian North, you know, I remember when, you know, the second game of the season, our first away game was actually Wroxham. And it was when they turned around and went, why are we going to Wroxham on a Tuesday night, you know, as our first away game? And the answer you got back was, well, other than I think it was Dereham at the time and Norwich United, who were both in the league at the time, which would be their sort of like Christmas fixture and Easter fixture, New Year's fixture, Harlow were the next nearest side to Wroxham in the league. And that's why we had to go to them on a Tuesday night. It's just incredible stuff. Absolutely incredible. But, I mean, Glenn, I mean, with yourself, I mean, how good is it to be back?
Yeah, it's good. You know, it's been a long time out. You know, I took a rest and sort of like felt the Braintree job and the Leicester job took an awful lot out of me, to be fair. Both clubs, when I took over, were struggling. I mean, Braintree didn't even have a side. And that was tough. You know, we were working on one of the smallest budgets in the league. Had one player on contract. I just got relegated from the Conference Prem. And we built a side and, you know, we got into a top five. But I just felt the tools I was given to run the side was just getting harder and harder. I knew that when I went in. But I didn't realise how hard it was when I went in. So that took its toll. And then obviously went back to Leicester just before COVID. And they were a side struggling. A lot of the players I had previously had all left. I think they were second from bottom of about 7 points when we took over. And then just before COVID hit, we were more or less mathematically safe. So it was like job done. And, you know, things were put in place that I didn't think I could work with. So I decided to step away. And, you know, the club has gone on from strength to strength under Darren Eady and Chris Wigger. And I wish them well and got numerous offers. But I think, like I say, you know, mentally and things, I don't really think I was ready to get back into football. And it's not really been since the last month where clubs have been phoning me up and sort of like asking if I'm interested. But while clubs have got managers, mate, I'm not going to talk to a football club and people are in charge and in the post. So they made a decision on the Tuesday after beating Woodbridge 1-0. I had a phone call on the Wednesday and met the chairman, Steve Boyle. Very, very ambitious. He saved the football club, really, I feel. Had it not been for him, Mr. Richard Wanderers have been a step six club for quite a while. He came in, gave them the tools. They signed people like Matt Blake, Beth Cunningham, Anton Clark. Won the division and then went up to what they call the furlough prem, won that, and then got into step four. And we haven't had the best of starts. We're sitting rock bottom at the moment. Chairman's rung me up. I've sat down with him, had a good conversation. He's ambitious. And I thought, it's 10 minutes from my house. It doesn't really affect my work. I run a small caravan and motorhome business, as you know. Rachel just said, I think you're ready. And I do really feel like mentally ready. Like the first 2 days after it all being released, I think you might have seen one or two things said on Twitter and that. But it just goes to show how far I've come as a person, because I've been pretty outspoken about my anxiety and how you deal with anxiety and mental health and everything I've been through. And I now understand what anxiety is, you know, it's a projection of what ifs. So don't think too far out the box and try and keep as much close to you as you possibly can, and don't share as much and don't go looking for something that's not there. So mentally, I feel in a lot better place. And like I say, once I met the chairman at his house and he just put his plan in front of me, I just thought, this is it now, you know. I'm ready to get back in. Like I said, surprised myself how well I handled the next 2 days, because like I said, I didn't really know how my mind would work. But yeah, I just took to it like a duck to water, and now it's about Ipswich Wanderers. It's not about Glenn Driver, Tony Kinsella. It's about Ipswich Wanderers, and it's about taking it on to the next level. James Buckle and Mark Goldfinch have done an unbelievable job there. You know, they've got back-to-back promotions. Yes, it was funded and well-funded by the football club to get them to the level that they're at now. So they were given some good tools to get them there. And the chairman decided to make a change. So I wish them two guys all the very best on their next adventure. But, you know, it's time to get the Tony Kinsella and Glenn Driver show back on the road. And hopefully, you know, this town shouldn't be just about Ipswich Town. You know, Ipswich Wanderers, in my opinion, should be the next biggest club in Suffolk. You've got Needham Market, you've got your Leicesters, your Lowestoffs, but Ipswich Wanderers is situated, our football ground literally backs on the back of Ipswich Town's training field. So it should be, in my opinion, the next biggest club. But a long, long way to go. The chairman said he would love to be a step two at the football at some time. That remains to be seen, because we all know how hard it is to get promotions at step four, step three. And I look at the Ipswich area, there's some fantastic youngsters coming through, but all the local sides are pretty much held together with quite a lot of experience. Mm-hmm. So we've got Matt Payne, Chris Rose in our squad, and on Saturday they're outstanding as a centre-half. We bought Stakey Black. Stakey's not everybody's cup of tea, but I've got a great working relationship with Matt Blake, and he could have walked away with a match ball Saturday. So lots of positives. Hard road ahead, but one we're really looking forward to. And I think with the chairman and the board we've got in place, you know, the proof will be in the pudding, won't it? So let's just hope that we can work hard together, enjoy our football, give kids a chance, because you know how much I feel about the youth football, and try and bring one or two of them into a positive changing room.
And I mean, let's be honest, I mean, you get certain players, and I don't know if Peter agrees as well, you'll get certain players that that play sort of exceptionally well under certain managers, and for me, Matt's one of those players that, we've laughed and joked, off air earlier on, and I've sent you a personal text as well. You know, as soon as you became the manager, you just knew who the first signing was going to be, because you know it was one of those things where you two are. He plays so well under your tutelage as well.
And What I personally think it is, we all talk about mental health, and I didn't really realise what mental health was until it affected me in a way where I was suicidal. That's how bad that I was, you know. I come through gambling addiction, alcohol. I've been on the brink. And, you know, I feel like I had a spiritual awakening that has pushed me on, and that saved me, you know. And Blakey goes through, people can say, he doesn't help himself. And that is clear. You know, I have said to Blakey, you're not the best non-league striker in Suffolk. I was. So we have the bits of banter and everything else. But I think with Matt, he's one of these people who needs to play for somebody he can trust. I'm not saying that he didn't trust the previous managers that he played under, because I know Bucks and Goldie done an awful lot for Matt. But things that happened in Matt's football career that shouldn't really happen in football clubs. And it happened to him at Leicester. It's happened to him at Wanderers. It's happened to him at Norwich United. And I think it's how you manage the player. And I personally believe he'll come back. Yes, Matt Blake will tell you that he's not as quick as he once was. But like I say, he could have walked away with a match ball Saturday. But when you talk about mental health and that, people don't know who Matt Blake is. They see what he does and what he writes. And I think it's a reaction of his that most probably helps him deal with the negativity by reacting. And sometimes he can be betrayed as something that he's clearly not. But like I said, people will listen to this and go, hang on a minute, do you actually follow him on Twitter? And I do, you know. Well, when I signed him, everybody's like, oh, shock. Oh, that wasn't going to happen. And it's the negativity come in, and I know we can all be keyboard warriors. I've done it myself, so I'm not making myself out to be a saint by any means. But I do think with social media platform, it's the easiest thing to do is keep kicking people when they're down. Mm. And it's my job to pick Matt Blake up and put him in a side where he will score goals. But I told him to leave his Twitter account alone. So if not, then every negative tweet, I should find him a tenner. I'd be rich, wouldn't I?
You would, yeah. But he's the type of guy, though, isn't he? That, you know, by now, I mean, I remember me and you talking about him, you know, a few years ago, in the same sort of context around sort of Alex Reid type thing, because it was always those two that were the two that, you know, especially in the sort of North and Premier, that were doing the always there year in, year out, almost fighting each other for top goal scorer, etc. And are you a little bit disappointed for him that he hasn't moved, you know, step two, step one, maybe even with the talent?
I am. I think when he was at Leicester, Billericay came in for him. That was no secret. Offered big, big money for him as well. But they signed Jake Robinson, who I want to congratulate, by the way, on scoring on his first start after his ACL injury. Great to see Robbo. And if you do get to see this, mate, well done on you. Good to see you back playing. But I think the Billericay situation was, you know, we were told you had a certain time to call us back if you're going to accept Glenn Tamplin's offer. our chairman's held out a little bit, you know, he was going back and forth. And then Glenn Tampner pulled the plug and went and signed Jake Robinson. So with Blakey, he stayed at Leiston. And then obviously, you know, we signed one or two strikers to try to play with Matt. Didn't quite work out as well as we thought it would do. And looking back, I have to take a little bit of responsibility because I made sort of like, with him and Nico, they were our star centre forwards. Then I brought in Jake Reed, and it just didn't quite happen for Matt in that season. And I think that scarred Matt for coming off 43, 44 goals. So I have to take a little bit of responsibility as a gaffer as well. But he's then sort of like played more locally because he's got young children. And the only teams who could most probably afford Matt Blake at the time were clubs at step four. So I think coming down step four, he got rewarded for it financially. But, you know, he's got, I think he scored something like 82 goals for Ipswich Wanderers in two seasons. So he scores goals. But yeah, I'd love to have seen him move up the levels. Unfortunately, he didn't. That would most probably be a regret in his football career. He had opportunities to join other football clubs. Leiston most probably held out for what was, he was the best, well, he won Golden Boot at step three, didn't he, Dave? You watched him play. He was on fire.
I think Glenn has made a very good point, David, about players with managers. Every manager has to trust his players, and the level we're talking about, the level is rising, it seems to me. I've watched non-league football for a long, long time, and all I've seen is the class of player that's coming through the teams now is a better player. And you can see, not being funny, the levels that Glenn has managed at. Any of those clubs we talk from step three upwards are capable of beating a league club, you feel, on their day, on a good day. And that's the kind of level you're dealing with. You touched on players that managers trust. And they can blow hot and cold, though. And it's, I can understand what Glenn has been through as a manager of a club like Leiston, with long travelling and all the problems that come with it. I can fully understand it, because even in the commentary box, it's a frantic place and you so want your own team to do well.
I agree with you, Peter. It's, I think player-management relationship is very important. I took over Ipswich Wanderers last Wednesday. Thursday, I went out and watched our under-18s down at Felixstowe. Saturday, I travelled with the side to go and watch our first team play, because I officially take over today. And yesterday, I went, Sunday morning, I got up and went and watched our EGA side under-14s play Greys. So I'm one of these managers who do go in, and I'd like to think Leiston would obviously tell me also. When I was at Braintree, there was an academy side run by Nicky Finch. I show a massive interest in that, and I gave one or two of his kids' debuts at step two. And going back to the Wanderer situation, Peter, I think you have to see what's beneath your first team to see what's going to be your future. And I don't think enough managers, and it's not about egos and all this, it's about you rectifying and having an identification as a football club on what young kids you can bring through a system that will benefit the football club in the long run. And a friend of mine, Rick Kerry, he set up the Ipswich Wanderers football and development. I went and watched the game yesterday, and I watched two sides, and it was a credit to under 14 kids and their coaches and staff of Greys as well, and Ipswich Wanderers, two teams trying to get the ball down and play, because it's the only, you know, if we were going to, if God wanted to play football up there, he'd have put a pitch in the sky. So I'm one of these people, we get it down and we play. And to see two coaches at under 14 level from both sets of side, wanting to see young 14-year-old keeper was rolling out to the fullback, fullback was going into midfield, midfield was going, it was just a joy to get up and go and watch. And it was the third, I've watched three games in a week, and I think I've watched five games in the last 4 years, because I completely come away from all football. And the buzz the under-18s and our under-14s have given me is just took me, it's got me excited again, because like I said, kids are your future, and I believe you have to believe in your kids. And at Leiston, I most probably gave under 21 at step three, I'd most probably say I gave 20 boys their debut at step three within that age group. So we've got one or two good kids that are coming through our programme, We've got to now work closely with them and their coaches. They've got to understand the pattern of play that me and Tony want to play. And we've got to take that right way through the levels and make it enjoyable and make sure that every kid that goes out there plays with a smile on his face. And I think you've got half a chance then.
Glenn, it's a juggling act, Glenn, isn't it, for you, with young players trying to come in at a higher level. It's a big step up from, you know, youth football to step three or step four or whatever. It's a massive step up. You have to juggle that. How do you keep them interested? Do you do what sometimes we do, let the players go out on loan, or do you loan young players in from the clubs around you like Ipswich or whoever? We've got several from Portsmouth at Bognor who are very, very talented young players and can adapt, but they're not technically your players. And right. That can be the same said of you, Glenn, with some of the young lads that are coming through with you. How do you keep them interested?
I think as Ipswich, as a town, there's not enough levels of football that's high enough for Ipswich Town to get their under-23s out to you. So you'll find people like Harley Curtis last year went on loan to Braintree Town. He's good enough to play step two, and he signed a contract at Chesterfield when Ipswich Town released him. So it's that... If you do get players from Ipswich Town, they're most probably of 18, maybe 19. But anybody 19 and upwards, Ipswich Town look to try to get them out at the highest level possible. With us, we've got a under-23s, but the gulf between SIL2 to Step 4 is absolutely massive. And it's so hard to close the gap because of the financial strains that put on your football club. Because... Yeah. If they go furlough Division 1 now, it's the money that it would cost for our reserve side to go into that is a lot more than it would be to pay the SIL, because the SIL is all in basically around Suffolk. If they go into the furlough league, they then go further afield. But the way I've always tried to juggle it is on a Saturday, if our reserve side has got, say, 16, 17 players, take 3 subs and let 2 come with us. So they sit on the bench with us. They're around the first team changing room. They're training with the first team on match days. They're getting the crowd atmosphere. And then if you name 2 of them boys as your subs and you're freeing it up, you can chuck an 18-year-old kid on with 10 minutes to go, knowing that's going to give his confidence and his development a massive, massive lift. And I think that's how I try and juggle our young kids. We try to bring them in, put them in when we can, but have them around our first team as much as we possibly can. Yeah. And I would never have took this job. And I said to the chairman, when I sat down with him, if you're looking for a manager to come in and run your first team, it's not for me. I'm not interested. If you're asking for me to come in and manage your football club and manage what is beneath your first team as well as, then I'm very, very interested. Because, like I said, the kids are the platform. Your first team is, yes, it is important, but clubs who are on limited budgets, should we call it a limited budget, we will have to work within the need. You need 2 or 3 of them to help you sign 1 or 2 Matt Blakes. You need to bring kids in who are not going to cost you as much as a 26-year-old who has played at step 3, is looking for 250 a week, when you're given a 16-year-old, 18-year-old, 25, 50. I think I'd rather go down that route than have a squad of players sitting on our bench that are my bench costing me 500 quid a week, say, for argument's sake, when you could really develop 2 kids in to sit on your bench and save you that money.
With that, I know you say you go down and watch, and I always say, you know, you're sort of like you going down to watch games, and managers going down to watch games is how it should be done. And I 100% agree with what you're saying. But do you actually have that sort of conversation with the managers, you know, from your sort of like under 18s, your EGA side, and you know, et cetera, et cetera? Do you have sort of like close contact with them as well as going down to watch the games? And do you also get to a stage where you go to your reserves or under 18s, under 23s and say to them, look, you know, we're going to be playing in this formation in the first team. You know, do you then ask them to play the same formation down to a certain level?
I watched our under-18s last week at Felixstowe. A credit to both sides. Felixstowe and ours both got the ball down and played. And that we played 4-3-3. you know, we play 3-5-2, 4-3-3. But with the 4-3-3, you look at the young kids. Our coaches, and this is only my first week involved, you can see what our coaches are trying to do. They're trying to get our wide boys to play out to in. And then our middle striker, he will take the place of our wide striker. So they're trying to get that movement and that pattern of play in, because that's what I've always loved. I love the 4-3-3. Kevin Keegan style football, you score two, we'll score six. That sort of vibe, you know. But I think going into this football club, the people who I know the people who are in charge, and they're footballing people, so it makes your job a lot easier. It is about results, but it isn't. I think at 14 and 16, I don't think results really become important until you get to 18. That's when you really find your winner mentality. And I've watched clubs at 16, and I've watched coaches absolutely ruin a 16-year-old boy because he's tried to do something correctly and it ain't gone right. And some of the language you hear at football clubs to young kids, I shouldn't be involved in football, Dave. Whatever, if you can't manage a 16-year-old kid, then I don't think you should be managing in football. Because that could scar him. Like I said to you earlier, you could bring a 18-year-old into your first team and sit him on your bench. Yeah, that takes him to there. You crucify a 16-year-old, how does he come back from that? So I think it's important that whatever we do as a football club, totally, we all have to be singing from the same hymn sheet. And we will have managers meeting at Ipswich Wanderers. We'll have one a month. Who's doing well? Where can we improve? We're looking to bring a goalkeeper coach in, a physio. There's so much got to be done at this football club to make it more professional than what it was. It's literally stripping it right back. And taking those small steps forward.
The reason I asked that question for is because, like, say, for instance, I don't know, all of a sudden you've got a bit of an injury crisis and you need a left back, or you need a right back, or you need a centre forward, or whatever else. And you're the team underneath yours, if it's a 23s, 18s, are playing the same system. That that young lad comes in, slots into your team, and knows how you want him to play because he's used to playing that on a regular basis.
Yeah, that's the only way forward. We will pick a system. We'll have one or two systems. See, like we've always said, it's the famous saying, isn't it? System don't win football games. Players do. But you've got to have a system for the players to help win that game. So it's a little bit of a toss-up in the air how you feel about that. I'm a believer that if you put a system in place and you've got the personnel to go in there and play it, and we've got someone playing in that position in our under-23s or 18s, you've got to be brave. Why go out and go and get 2, 3, 4 loanees in that position, right? If you're safe in the division at the moment, we're bottom of the league and our queue is to climb the table as quick as possible. So bringing an 18-year-old boy from our under-23s into our first team at the moment, he's not really going to do his education the world of good. We need to get to a position where we can stay, where we know we're going to be safe, hopefully. And then we look to bring those kids in sort of like as and when we feel right to slot into those places, because you could just end up ruining the kid. You put him in at 16, 17 and he makes a mistake. How does he come?
Absolutely. Can I just say, Glenn, right, our manager at Bognor, Robbie Blake, is trying to do exactly what you're doing. He's inherited some younger players, Joe Briffer, Danny Howick, and he's giving them game time and doing exactly what they've got to be right to come in. Young Joe Briffer, unfortunately, came in. He's only 16, 17 years old. He's done very well in the appearances that he's made. He started a few games, but we were leading 3-2 against Carl Shorten, I think it was. And a cross shot comes in. He heads it over our excellent keeper and it's 3-3. And it's an own goal. And this boy hasn't played since. Quite rightly so, too. He's been just pulled out and given that break, he has to be integrated again, and he will come. That time will come. The crowd are very, very sympathetic to the younger players at Bognor, which helps. It'll help you, Glenn, I'm sure, with your younger players if your supporters understand the situation. And I think you communicating well with supporters will help you and your job, and them to appreciate the club and the job that you're trying to do.
It was like yesterday morning, you know. You can see people, Glenn's here. You know, why is he watching our under-14s? Why? Because you're part of a football club. you know, and it don't matter that Glenn's here. If I weren't there, I'd make sure Tony was there. So it's doing things properly. And like I said, I had a young boy called Adam Blaze. I don't know if you can remember him, Dave, at Leicester. I watched this kid at 15 and I was like, young striker, Peter. I was like, wow, this boy, brave, great feet, hold up play, turn of pace, scores goal. He had the lot. Stocky, strong. He gave his debut at 16 in our first team. And had he not been so clever, I think he's a doctor or a lawyer or whatever he's doing now, I personally believe that boy would have gone on and played a very, very good level. Don't know where he is now. I got told he went off to university and everything else. But they're out there, Peter. You just got to be brave enough to put them in. Take them out, put them in, and then be brave enough to keep with them to help them develop them in your side. And I'm a brave manager, you know. I don't care. Rooney broke into the scene at Everton at 16. The rest is history. I ain't saying we got away, Rooney, but, you know, you've got to be brave, haven't you? And I'm sure Robbie's doing the same.
Absolutely.
You've got to be brave at times.
Yeah.
With you sort of taking over officially today, I mean, is it a nightmare for you, or is it a godsend for you that you've actually got sort of 2 weeks before you play your first sort of competitive game at home to Bowers? Is that a good thing for you, so you can actually sort of get your feet under the table, get to the players, a bit more training time with the players and get your ideas across to them? Or is it something that you know, because you've been out of it for a long period of time, that you just want to get back and start being in charge and standing on that touchline?
Previous to Saturday, right, I would have said, I can't wait to have a 2 week break. But watching how these lads play Saturday against Brentwood, who, you know, are many people's favourites for a playoff position. You know, Sam Deering's there, Lewis Price is there. You know, they've got some big, big hitters. And when their team was coming up on the little TV screen on the thing, I was like, well, we're a side struggling with no confidence. And I was like, wow. The list of names, you know, Billy Roast and all these players' names. And I thought, okay, this is a test, Dave. If their manager's honest, he got away with one Saturday. We should have been 3-1 up at half time, 4-5-1 up before the end of the game. Their keeper's got man of the match. We've missed chance after chance. And before I went in, when you see the results, and I know quite a lot of the players, I've never managed at step four, so I didn't really know what the level of was. I look at that Brentwood side. Early doors, most probably got to find their feet, bed their players in. I'm sure they will be up there. But on that evidence, we're not far off competing against sides at the top half. So the answer to your question is yes, it gives me opportunities to stamp my fiery on what I want to do with the side over the next 2 weeks. We play Bowser and Pitsy's our first game, official game in charge. And we look forward to it. And before that time, we'll get 3 or 4 training sessions in, and hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll be in a better situation than we were Saturday. One or two bodies will certainly show their faces and come into the building. But the players who are there, mate, they've got to prove to us they want to be there. And, you know, it's positive, very, very positive. And a lot of the players were very good friends of the previous managers, so that's always a worry because you haven't got them all on contract. A little bit like Enfield, everybody leaves, don't they? You know, and you have to start again. But yeah, I look forward to really getting to work. I spoke to numerous people today, not only players, but people who can come in and help improve our football club. And you know, that I'm hands-on, mate. You know, golf day, sponsorship, businesses, and a lot of contacts in the game. And I just want to prove to myself that there's an unfinished business with me, you know. People, like I said, people who put me down, people who go against the grain, people who listen, you drive me forward. So I keep saying I can't, and I will. And I can't wait. Really looking forward to it.
And listen, mate, I've got no doubts, 100% you will do it, because I know what you're like. I know exactly how determined you are, and, you know, 100%.
I'll be tapping you up for some players, mate.
in all fairness. It's quite funny, actually. The amount of text messages I get, can you find me a club? Can you find me a club? So I should be taking 10%. But no,
You can't claim fame to Byron Lawrence, though. You tried once or twice. I found Byron Lawrence.
you look at these sort of players and stuff. I mean, was it like, you know, you shouting out, Rachel, where's my black book? Do you know what I mean? And dusting it off and sort of getting it out. And, you know, was it, or was you getting all your players as well, giving you a call, say, boss, I'm ready to come back to it?
She gave me, that was quite funny. I went Saturday and she went, do you want your football folder? And I went, my football folder? She went, yeah, you still got your football folder. So she opened up this football folder and I still had Leicester's team sheet, what I had picked for my last game. And I flipped the page over and all my set pieces and everything else were still on there, you know. And I looked and I thought, wow, there's not many players left there now. You know what I mean? I think Sam Donkin, the goalkeeper, is there. Ollie Saunders is there. And everything else. So when you look at Leicester and the job Chris Wigger and Darren Eady have done, they've done unbelievable. You know, the players they've brought in and to get playoffs last year, they lost five or six of their boys. I think they lost their complete front line. Will Davis went to Braintree. I think the boy Ben Folkes left. Went to York. I think one of the other lads went to York City. So they lost players to a higher level, which is an absolute credit to those two guys because they haven't stopped them boys from progressing. They got playoffs last year. They've now brought other lads in and they've got to go again. So, and you know where Leicester is, a pair of you. They've done an unbelievable job there. And like I say, it's a club that will always be close to my heart, as is Needham Market, because I played there. And I just wish both clubs all the very best for the future. I really do. Mm.
No, absolutely, 100%. I mean, Peter, a few bits and bobs for yourself. I mean, tell everybody, you know, that's watching. I mean, how did sort of the Bognor Regis Radio come about?
Well, basically, it came about through just the need for it to be done because we were asked to start a little radio station and I've been watching Bognor for many years. When I stopped playing, I've done this professionally for 37 years, football commentary with Capital Radio and right through ITV, everybody, Sky, I've worked for them all. And now I started at Bognor many years ago doing commentaries and the club liked it and invited me and Peter Kelly Sullivan and Liam to form a media team. And to be fair, we use an internet platform and we commentate on every game. I obviously have the experience of been through this many, many years. And they're my team, my local team, Bognor Regis Town. Even though I'm a Leicester supporter, I followed Pompey, Saints, Brighton. I've covered them as a sports editor, got to know a lot of players, a lot of contacts. And I basically said, let's, you know, we'll get it together. And it's been going now for a number of years. And we've had a growing audience and lots of nice comments about it. And fans that can't get to the games, there is a big interest now in non-league football. As Glenn will tell you, it's growing and people don't want to be, you know, the Premier League football's lost a little bit of its glamour. Players are untouchable these days from when I was commentating early on. And to go to watch a good standard non-league football is entertaining. I can remember many years ago on a Boxing Day when Jack Pearce was running the team, going to watch Bognor against Basingstoke, which was our nearest local derby on a Boxing Day. It was one of the best games I saw that year. And Coxie scored a goal from 40 yards. And it was just a wonderful game. And my uncle who came with me said it was fantastic just to watch and enjoy without pressure from other, you know, we're all a big family, the football families, you know, David. And it's a level, a very good level now, and it's enjoyable and entertaining. And the radio is a part of it. You know, we all, you know, off the back of the players, we help the club, we're sponsored. It's something that every little club should try and do if they can. Audiences will be small at first, but success brings success. If you do it well, the players all know us, they all respond to us, and we have sponsorship for a man of the match. And it's a good experience, David. Mm. Not when you're losing, of course. We've just lost at Chess Hunt, you know, with having created enough chances. to have won that game. But Wakuchu was in good form, a hat-trick for Cheshunt, who come down a level. And I was, you know, there is a, we do, they looked after us very well. You'll find that the clubs appreciate the commentary. We get a lot of away fans that tune in as well, David, which is a bonus for the other club as well, because we'll, you've promoted our little, you put it out, you know, as a Twitter feed, and we've had the response, and I get, we invite comments as well, and they come through, and we'll always try in the commentaries to respond to them if we can.
And I know it's a situation where, you know, we do ours and you know, for it, and normally I have a gentleman that comes and helps me do it, or if not, I think the last few ones we've done, we've had sort of players that are on the injured list that have come up, people like Lewis Taff and Carlos this week, and we were sitting there doing it this week, and Carlos, of course, he's a Spanish young man, and all of a sudden you've seen all these Spanish people listening in, you're thinking, Stru, where, you know, this is unbelievable. And you've got people like listening from Madrid and places like this, like, and it's an incredible, but you were saying about atmosphere in non-league football, and I don't know at the time if Glenn was actually the manager of Leiston, and we always call it different names, but
Leiston.
it was that situation where it was, I think it was like a League Cup game or something when I was with Harlow, and it was either a League Cup or a trophy game. And it was a Tuesday night, and it could only have been like about 150, 200 people in the crowd. But I think, you know, Leiston were winning, and Arlo came back, and the atmosphere that night felt like it was like about 80,000 in there. The place was rocking. It was unbelievable. And I always remember it. And then, of course, we went on and played Lowestoft in the round after, and it was exactly the same sort of atmosphere again. But it was, they were sort of two games that sort of always stuck in my mind. And I think the one game that got me involved in non-league football, like, you know, it's sort of, well, 12, 13 years ago, I was invited to go and see a Harlow game. And funny enough, it was against Enfield Town. And I just remember, you know, what, the Enfield Town striker coming up from a corner, headers a ball down, and the Harlow goalkeeper, Bert was diving to his right, and he must have been about 7 foot, this keeper. He was massive, and he looked like he was going to go one way. He got a deflection, and somehow he's dived completely the other way, down low, and tipped it round the post. And it was just one of those things that, to this day, sort of 13 years later, I think that was the one thing that happened in that game that sort of like just sort of like grabbed you by the throat and said, this is the game for you. Do you know what I mean? And it was just that sort of one sort of small incident like that. And it was
Did you see the save for the Worthing keeper?
I didn't
see the save on Twitter from the Worthing keeper.
I haven't seen that, no.
Yeah, I've seen that actually, Glenn. Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's quite something. I have to be honest as well, talking of goalkeepers at Leiston, one of the magic moments in non-league football, I can remember Dan Lincoln, who keeps for Dorking, you know, came up, we played Leiston. I was at the game when Dan, in the last minute, Dan Lincoln, the keeper, comes up for a corner, hits the underside of the bar and gets turned in. I don't know whether you were in charge, Glenn, at the time. Jimmy Wilde turned it in for a 1-1 draw in a league game. It was just one of those. Leiston were going very well, of course, at the time, so probably you were there then.
Yeah, I think I was. Yeah, we played you at home. We won 1-0 on the opening day of the season.
Yeah,
and then we came to your place, and I think you gave us a good hiding in the trophy.
Yeah,
and then, yeah. I think then we came in a league game, and I think we drew one. Yeah, I think it was a draw. I think we picked up.
Absolutely, I have to say, David. Just another thing as well on the Rocks Radio that we do, the international listenership is quite incredible. We've got regular listeners from New Zealand, South America, Canada, that listen, that have got Bognor associations. So those roots never die, I have to say, in people, especially with non-league football clubs. And when there's a little bit of success, of course, everything goes well. As you know, Glenn, from your managerial past, the minute a bit of success comes along, you're the favourite guy. And you know, you have to keep a level head, because football, as we all know, is about winning, drawing and losing. You can't win every game. Nobody does that. And there are some magic moments that you'll remember. At the end of the day, you'll look back on your career, I'm sure, Glenn, and say, I've thoroughly enjoyed it for the most part.
Yeah,
I mean,
definitely. I mean, sorry, Dave.
No, I was going to say, we're just talking about, just quickly, just seeing Bognor's sort of fixture list. And we were talking about Abley and about having to come down. And some of these times, I think, when they put these fixtures together, they're a bit sadistic, aren't they? Because I just had a look at this, because Bognor Regis' away games, it was like Enfield Town, Chesson, then it's home to Kingstone, and then back down to play Potters Bar Crusaders.
Yeah,
that's Potters Bar Town, sorry. And then you're at home to Concord, and then you're back down here to play Hornchurch. And it's just like, and then you've got a couple of weeks off, and then you've got to come back down and play Billericay. I mean, it's like,
you're quite right, David. I have to say, we spend, as I said earlier in the show, I seem to spend more time in the Dartford Tunnel waiting to get through there than anywhere else. I can remember, I think we had to do it when we played Glens Leeston as well. So that is that puts one or two supporters off on their coaches and what have we. But, you know, we seem to wait at least an hour to get in and out of that. And at Enfield, we went round the other way. We picked up all the players. Give you some idea, I didn't get home till 10:30 from Enfield because we pick up the players.
Does that put a strain on the football club, Peter? That sort of travelling?
Yeah, and financially,
yes.
Glenn, we were, I must be honest, we have had a supporters coach which has been very well run by the likes of Ken Wood and Dave Robinson. I'll give them, they're the commercial people. They've run it very, very well. But it's at Enfield on Saturday, we've been saved by being able, the football club has been able to contribute to a 55-seater coach by the players coming with us and the club paying, keeping the money things level. It's something you can look at. It's also quite good for players and supporters occasionally. You know, it's not great when you've lost, obviously, and the players, you know, they're jollying up a little bit at the back and you're thinking, oh, bloody hell. Do you know what I mean? But there, it's worth looking at. Not a minibus. You need to travel in a bit of comfort if you're going long distance, Glenn, as you would know. Otherwise, it defeats the object, I would say, most certainly.
I mean, are you a little bit disappointed, Peter, as well? I mean, I always feel, when you see the new season and people start talking about who's going to win the league and who's going to be in the playoffs, I mean, Bognor always mentioned in that sort of, you know, sort of company. And I mean, are you a little bit disappointed that, you know, that you're still where you are and you've not sort of moved on to sort of step two?
I have to be realistic, Dave, and Glenn will be like this. I talk to Robbie Blake every week, the manager. And I have to be honest, the teams that are in the league, there's some very good teams in the league. And the standard of footballer in step three is, I think, very, very good. So you have to be, as a commentator and a journalist, that I, having been a player as well, I have to look at it from both sides. And yes, we expected a lot better last year. We had an unbeaten pre-season. What at Averley 6-1, and we're all expecting to be rolling up towards the playoffs and what have we. That after a good couple of runs, that there was a hint of it happening, but it never did. And that's due to the opposition that we're playing. Always had good side, injury lists, all these things come into play. Players leaving, players going. It's a horrible mechanism. And I have every sympathy for the likes of Glenn and Robbie Blake, our manager here at Bognor. I support him wholeheartedly because trying to do the job at this level on the budgets that they've got to get good players is very, very difficult. So we are expecting better things. It does just need a good run, David. We said after Cheshunt, and Glenn will back you up on this, if you get a winning one of three or four, everything goes the right way. You're suddenly moving up the table because it's so tight and very competitive right through these step three and step fours.
Well, I know last year, you know, and I don't know if Glenn was sort of watching, you know, the tables and stuff last year.
I was.
One of the Southern League leagues, I think it was the Central last year, with Colville and Tamworth, Nuneaton, Bury, et cetera, in there last year. You looked at that and said, well, that's definitely the strongest step three league last year. But when you actually look at the Isthmian this year, I mean, it's just ridiculous when you look down and see Cray Wanderers in 19th. And I know it's only early doors, but, you know, Cray Wanderers 19th, Dulwich Hamlet 17th, Canby Island, who in the playoffs last year, 16th, Cheshunt was step two, there 15th, yourself 14th. You know, you and you look at this and you still keep going, Lewis 9th, Billericay you know, who probably would have said maybe who they signed this year would probably be favourite seventh, you know, and it's incredible to see, you know, the depth is incredible.
I've managed in both leagues. I've managed in, obviously, the Ishpeming League at Step 3, and I've also in the Southern Central League for Leiston. And I found the Ishpeming League harder. I did, but I don't. But for the games I've done in the Central, to the games I've done in the Ishpeming League, I would have said the Ishpeming League was a harder league. Four seasons ago, I think I was at Leicester. Now, I felt the Ishpeming League was a stronger league. When I look now, and a good friend of mine, Jake, has gone to Colville. You've had Elvechurch up there last year, like you say, Nuneaton Borough. All these sides who we went to away and played or at home. When I left Leicester the first time round, we were around fifth or sixth, I believe it was, when I left first time round. I thought the Ishpeming League, coming out of the Ishpeming League, I thought was a lot harder than the Northern League. But speaking to people from Leicester now, they reckon the Central League is tougher than the Ishpeming League. But when I look at the clubs in there, like the Hornchurches, who they've got in charge of them, Avely getting out of it last year, I couldn't tell you what one's the strongest league out of the two now. But like I said, it seems like the Ishpeming League certainly looks a tough league to get out this year.
Mm. Well, before we jump down the mouse hole, I've got one more question to ask Peter, really, because I'm very, really interested. With all your experience of all the commentaries that you've done, I mean, what would you say were your top two commentaries, one in sort of the professional game, and, you know, best games that you've commentated on, in the professional game and one doing the Bognor Regis Radio?
Big question, that. Big question. I've commentated on cup finals and England games and what have we. The most bizarre one I ever remember, I think, was Southampton, where it was noted in the local paper that I lost it because it was an extraordinary day for many reasons. But it was Fulham against Southampton at QPR, and Antti Niemi coming up, heading it just like the Leiston game, heading against the bar, the ball being turned in, and me losing it as a commentator. Rory Delap saying that he nearly crashed the car with excitement with the things that were going on, and the way I commentated on it. I can remember that one that comes straight away to mind. As for Bognor, obviously, there have been so many exciting moments. I think probably Dulwich Hamlet beating them in the playoff final to go up to the Southern when Jamie Howell, the current assistant, was in charge with Darren Kilpatrick. That was a special day. Crowds of over 3,000 at Nywood Lane. I think 10,000 people watched Bognor in that week, including the playoffs. They come to mind, and there have been one or two other very exciting moments. So many games, they all roll into one, David, at the end, I'm afraid to say, after all these years. This is my 37th season commentating on football, having played for 15, from 15, you know, having played up to 30 when my ankles gave way playing. So, you know, there we go.
Well, guys, at this point of every show, we always go to our little special feature. We call it Down the Mousehole because, of course, we're joined by the legend himself, Mr. Andrew Large, from, of course, Secretary down at Mousehole. And guys, Andrew, I'll just introduce you to everybody. We've got Peter Hood, who's, of course, is the voice of Rocks Radio for Bognor Regis. And, of course, for me, somebody who's a very, very good friend and somebody that was so fantastic to see back in management and back on the show, of course, in Glenn Driver, who's the new manager of Ipswich Wanderers. Guys, hey. And this is Andrew from Mousehole. And, Andrew, I mean, first things first, my shirt's on order, sir. I'm just waiting for it to come through.
Yeah, so's mine.
And... what, it's a bit of a different day for you, wasn't it? I mean, something that you're not used to on Saturday.
Yeah, first defeat in 14 matches, if you include the run-in at the end of last season that got us promotion. But no sense of disappointment whatsoever. Salisbury really walloped us. They are a fantastic side. Mm. And we think two things about it, really. One is it shows what the gap is between the different levels as you go up the steps. And we have to remember, we're just fresh out of step five. We're still wet behind the ears at step four. Salisbury look as though they're destined for step two. And the gap really, really showed. Mm. Yeah, they really were superb on the day. And I think 5-0 didn't flatter them at all. So those are those. We don't feel a sense of disappointment, but it shows that if we want to aspire to go further, that's the distance we need to travel. So all in good time. All is not lost.
And of course, on Saturday as well, you had a very, very special guest, didn't you?
We did indeed. We were privileged to have David Martin, the vice chair of the Southern League, who, in a way, made the day for us in many respects, because he came to present the August Team of the Month award to Mousel, which, when you think about it, is a fantastic achievement for the players, because it was their first month playing at the highest ever level in the club's 100-year history, and they went and won Team of the Month. That's fantastic.
I don't know if Peter and Glenn have actually seen any of the footage of some of the goals as well that Mousel scored in the month. They were absolutely incredible. In fact, and I'll release it now, they won, goal of the week. And then they've also won August goal of the month for the Summer League as well in the goal show as well. And some of the goals that went flying in were just absolutely incredible. I mean, they were just sort of like, you know, when I watched them, was putting the goal show together, you're sitting there with your mouth open because you just couldn't believe these goals that were coming in from all over the place. But I actually texted, I don't know if you know this, and I don't suppose Dave will mind me saying it, I contacted him when I saw he was there, and I said, you could have asked me to go instead. I would have loved to have gone down, of course, but I'm not an official. But I was just laughing and joking with him. And I said, what time did you get home? Because we were talking to him about St. Kells. And his message to me was, he said he left Penzance on the train at 17:50. He got a change at Exeter St. David's, and he said he got back in his car at Yeovil Junction at 10:30, and he finally got home at 2300 at 11 o'clock. He said, and I'm absolutely exhausted today.
Yeah. And I bet he was wet as well, because the rain on Saturday was, someone described it as biblical. It was amazing. And he had to go on the pitch before the match to make his presentation. I expect he just about dried out by the time he got home. But all I can say about travel and time is, welcome to the club.
Yeah, absolutely.
And and if you don't know Andrew as well, of course, you know, maybe not in the same extent as yourselves, but almost there. Of course, Bognor have got the same sort of issues as you've got with the travelling. Maybe not as much as you, but that, you know, there's maybe halfway or three quarters of the way to the same sort of length of journeys that you've got to do this year. But I mean, with the club itself, I see that this week as well, there's been the chairman's been out and done a little video about trying to get the road done. I mean, do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, we can. There's been talk about a new access road into the club for many, many years, but the chairman pushed it forward as a top of the agenda item a couple of years ago. We got planning permission for it and have done quite a lot of the exploratory work, but it now needs some major funds to actually get the road built. So over the next few weeks, the club's going to be launching a crowdfunding campaign and sort of promoting the road as not just a benefit to the club, but a benefit to the sort of residents of the village that the club is next to. And the poor buggers, of course, now we've got promoted and we get bigger gates and more traffic, all the traffic has to go through the village to the ground. So if we can get this road built, none of that traffic will go through the village at all. It'll completely bypass it. But also it'll set the club up to be much more accessible to the local community. And maybe there'll be some commercial benefit in that as well. Because the ground is quite, as you will remember from your summer excursion, the ground is quite difficult to get to. And you have to go up a potholed, that's sort right. of single track driveway to get to it. It's okay once you get there. It's just getting there. If you're exhausted and your suspension is still intact, you've done really well.
And also as well, guys, as well, when you come out, if you take the wrong turning like my wife did, you're going down these roads that seem, as you keep going round and turning right or turning left, the roads seem to get smaller and smaller and smaller. So you've got to make sure as well that you take the right turning out of the ground. And we found it quite easy going in, but going out, we went all around the village.
It's called a Cornish conspiracy.
Once you're in, you can't get out.
There's a song, isn't there, which says you can check out, but you can never leave. Something like that. Yeah. Anyway, that's the plan. It's quite interesting because just building a road of probably, I don't know, 200 to 300 meters long requires ever such a lot of preparatory work, you know, drainage schemes, ecological schemes. There's been an archaeological survey on the site as well. So all those things have taken absolutely ages. But we're now coming up to the point now where we want to, you know, go for tenders for the building of the road, because when the planning permission was put in 2-3 years ago, we had no idea of the costs. But you can bet your life, whatever the costs might have been then, have probably doubled in the meantime.
And of course, this weekend,
so we need some funds.
Yeah. And this weekend, of course, you've got another local derby in the FA Trophy.
Yes. Our good friends from Tavistock, who we played a few weeks ago, when we made a joke on this programme, didn't we, that it's our local derby and it's 90 miles away. That's how it is at the moment. So they're coming to us on Saturday in the Trophy. Trophy's a new venture for us as well. And we hope to progress.
And I mean, everybody at the club, though, still sort of like still on a high. I know, you know, as you said, like, I know, I had Salisbury down as one of my favourites for the league. I'll be honest at the beginning of the season with the players that they'd signed. So, I mean, as you said, going into that, do you think, in a weird way, does it give you a little bit more confidence to going into the Tavistock game? Or do you feel that, you know, some of the players might have been knocked a little bit because they're not necessarily used to...
No, I don't think so at all. I think there's a lot to learn from when you lose to an opposition of the calibre of Salisbury. There is a lot to learn about things like, you know, pressing, winning the ball back, not giving your opponents an inch of space, things like that. That's the next step, I think. So, as I said, no sense of disappointment. I think the players will be up for a bit of a cup run. We've already played, hang on a moment. We've already played 5 cup games this season in the FA Cup and the Trophy. I don't think we've ever gone further than about 2 preliminary rounds in the past. So we've got a taste for it. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, it's also useful to pick up a bit of prize money. We have a joke about this. The prize money pays for the match officials. It's a long way for them to come to these matches. Their expenses, you know, without them the game wouldn't take place. But the fact is, the further up the steps you go, the scarcer are the match officials in the local area to officiate at that level. So they have to come further. That's part of life. It's what we accept.
I just break away just for a minute. We said we'd keep you up to date with what's going on at Chelmsford tonight. And good news so far for Mr. Halsey, because it's Chelmsford City 1-1 at half-time. So they're still holding their own, you know, against Chelmsford, which are 2 divisions higher than them. So all the best and keep going to Ware. And I suppose one thing to ask you, Andrew, was I saw pictures of you and a little bit of a video of you as well. And of course, way out west that Pablo was doing and the highlights and that. I mean, how was the journey to Malvern?
Long. because in, I don't know how many times I've told this story, but in the middle of Cornwall at the moment, there is a stretch of road 8 miles long on the A30, which is the main road in, which is being converted to a dual carriageway. And it's causing massive, massive disruption, delays, diversions. So we left, the coach left Penzance about an hour earlier than originally scheduled. And we had to phone up I think it's when we were at the bottom of the M5 to tell the referee we were unlikely to get there before 2:30. And could he consider delaying the kickoff? As it turns out, we got there about 2:15 and we kicked off at 3:30. It really did seem a very, very long journey. It's obviously the same miles as it always is, but on a Saturday and with roadworks and delays, it's one of those things. And I'll tell you something else about the Malvern match. It was blisteringly hot.
Yeah.
It was 28 degrees down at pitch side, playing on their 3G pitch, which I think probably makes it seem a bit hotter.
Yeah, probably would have been about 30, 32, that pitch. I would have thought about 4 degrees higher. But just a quickie, just in case Glenn's got a pen and paper handy, just in case he's interested. Greys have let Callum Leahy, Chris Miller and Lewis Clark released today, just in case you've got their numbers in that black book that your lady wife's got.
I've had to buy another one.
But, guys, have you ever been down to Mousel or have you been anywhere near Mousel before?
No.
No, I haven't.
I wouldn't even know where it is.
The deepest, darkest Cornwall, right? Yeah,
think Land's End.
Yeah.
Think Land's End. You're about 8 miles short of Land's End. So a bit, I was thinking about Bognor Regis. You can't get further south than that. You can't get further west than Mousel until you fall off the end of the, you know, the end of the country.
What sort of crowds do you get?
We're averaging, hang on a moment, I can tell you exactly. We're averaging 225 at the moment. That's in all games, cup and league. But I mean, I have to say, we in our cup games, the opposition have brought sizable number of supporters because they like coming to Cornwall. They often make a weekend or an overnight.
Yeah, the beach is a nice, I've heard.
Yeah, yeah, especially on rainy days. So our average last season, if you take out a very low one on a terrible weather evening, and if you take out the very last match of the season, the one in which we won promotion, if you take those two outliers out, our average last season was about 180. This season, it's 225.
So, What about yours, Peter? What are you up to, you guys at Bognor?
We've had very good crowds, Glenn. We've had roughly about 1,000 for each game. Yeah. We played three home games, and Pompey were playing at home against Carshalton, 666. Lewis, we had just under 1,000, and we had 1,000 for our opening game. As well against Hashtag, who bought quite a few, the YouTube team that have got up. We're averaging 2 of 1,000, 1 of 666.
That's amazing.
Clickety click. Very good.
I do say this to all our guests every week when Andrew's on or Pablo's on as well. If you get a chance, have a on one of the days when you've got nothing to do, just have a look at Mousel's YouTube channel, because the coverage that the guys do on there is absolutely incredible. They do this way out west. They did like a, and I would suppose it's a little bit like a mini Welcome to Wrexham in a way. And if you've seen Welcome to Wrexham, which is absolutely outstanding, you know, way out west, he's up there with it. It's absolutely superb. The coverage and that they've got is absolutely brilliant. It's well worth having a watch. And if you're ever in that sort of area, go down there, because as I said, it's probably one of the most picturesque grounds that I've ever been to. Lovely place, and every single person in that club is absolutely top draw as well. It's a lovely visit if you ever get the chance to, or a pre-season friendly maybe Bognor against.
Oh yes, so. we like those
away for you, Peter.
Well, thanks, guys.
to finish with, on Saturday, of course, in the FA Cup, and I hadn't seen how Mousel were doing. I'd got it on my notifications and it kept coming up, and they were saying, oh, brilliant from Mousel. And I thought, oh, they've equalised, because I saw that he was 1-0 down at the time. And I was doing the commentary and it kept flicking up. And I kept saying, I think Mousel have equalised. And I couldn't get to it on my iPad to actually, because the Wi-Fi was dreadful on Saturday. I couldn't get to it to switch into it to see what was going on. And I said to the secretary at the end, I said, I said, oh, I do hope Mousel got through. It'd be nice, wouldn't it? A nice away trip down at Mousel. He went, no, I don't want none of that. He said, they can come to Mousel, but I don't want to go all the way down.
Yeah.
But it's he's a lovely, lovely place. And we wish you all the best on Saturday against Tavistock.
Yeah. And then we're off to Yate Town the Saturday after, which is another first ever visit. You know, new opponents. We've got this is the exciting thing about this season, is playing fresh opponents.
Mm.
And I was asking our manager, Jake Ash, how many of the 19 clubs he'd ever played against when he was captain of Truro City some years ago. And he knows 14 out of those 19 opponents, although some of them have got new grounds. So he knows the opponents, but not necessarily the new grounds. So that's an interesting little fact, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. Well, guys, time has run away from us, I'm afraid to say, but a massive thank you for joining us. I mean, Peter, it's been fantastic to see you in the flesh, recognise the voice for years, and it's fantastic to see you.
Thanks, David.
It's been superb. Maybe I'll pick your brains on how I can improve, and I'll send you a couple of texts if that's all right.
No problem.
Always improve. But again, Andrew, massive thank you for joining us again this week, and hopefully we'll see you again next week. We've got another victory in your back pocket next week. And an advance in the trophy, and who knows, it could be Enfield versus Mousel in the trophy. But I keep my fingers crossed for that one.
And, which Enfield is that?
Enfield Town,
right?
Yeah, okay. So that will be good. And of course, I can't even say how much of a pleasure it is to see you looking so well, sir. And how absolutely fantastic to have you on with us tonight. I'm over the moon to see you and to see you looking as good as you do. And thank you for spending the time with us tonight. Thank Rachel for me as well for taking you away from her for tonight. But a massive thank you for that. And I wish you all the very, very best in the coming weeks. Of course, with Ipswich as well, but a massive thank you. And of course, to everybody else, a massive thank you for watching tonight. Please don't forget, Wednesday night, of course, we're back with another episode of The Goal Show for the Southern League. So you'll get to see who won Goal of the Week last week. And it's a fantastic goal. And it's probably the one that I wanted to win this week. So I'm quite pleased that it actually won it this week. But I won't let you on. You can wait till Wednesday night to find out who wins that. But please make sure you subscribe to the Southern League YouTube channel to get all the latest from there. And one thing that I should have said at the beginning of the programme, sending all my love, best wishes from the non-league family to Steve Whitney. Keep strong, my friend, and keep well, and hopefully you will turn a corner and surprise everybody in the medical world, and hopefully you will turn that corner, and we send so much love to you and to your family in this tough time that you're going through at this present in time. And also as well to the Southern League chairman as well, Anthony as well, who's also having a hard time at the moment. We wish you all the very, very best, yourself, Debbie, and the rest of the family as well at this time. But a massive thank you for watching tonight, and I'll see you next week.